Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A stabbing shuts down a Gresham skate park. The Postal Service is shutting down over 3,000 post offices. And a West Virginia school is shut down when it's found to be chock full of meth.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, cover your innards, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, July 27th, 2011. One man was stabbed and a nearby MAC station closed briefly after reports of a fight at East Powell and Southeast Roberts in Gresham on Tuesday evening.
One man.
Officers were dispatched about 9:20 p.m. to a report of about 30 people and lots of yelling. Arriving officers learned that a 21-year-old man had left for Legacy Mount Hood Medical Center with a stab wound. The man told police there was a fight near a skate park between two groups that started out as an argument. The Gresham Central MAC station was closed for a short time.
It's a fight that started out as an argument. Before that, it was an imbroglio. Before that, it was a brouhaha.
A kerfuffle.
Nah, I was going to go to kerfuffle.
Yeah.
Before that, it was a...
Jiminy Pots.
It's a snicky snacky, wacky cracky.
A cracker doodle.
Okay. Perhaps not.
No. I do like, though, if that's an official thing on the police report, that police were dispatched to a report of 30 people and lots of yelling.
And also, there was something out of the ordinary happening that night.
Yes. Hey. Yes, Gresham MAC station. I mean, come on.
Zang. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm, and hello to you. It is Wednesday, July 27th, 2011. Coming up later in this hour, your Science on the March, also entertainment news. And don't forget, you can get this program later today via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Should you desire that. Coming up next hour, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll be talking to Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week about their Best of Portland issue that's coming out today. I believe it is on newsstands today. You can get that. That's coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com.
The U.S. Postal Service is looking into closing nearly 3,700 post offices in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. to reduce red ink. Is that an issue? That they use too much red ink?
Yes.
Oh, I get it.
I believe it's a metaphor.
Oh, right. Sorry. Because I know they use red ink on the thing, don't they, that cancels? Never mind. Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe says there's been a shift with fewer letters being delivered.
This is Post 1.
Let's see.
With a lot of e-commerce, we're delivering a lot more packages today, and we'll continue to see that out into the future.
I'm sorry? Just hold it.
With a lot of e-commerce, we're delivering a lot more packages today, and we'll continue to see that out into the future.
Not full of felt on that guy.
Says, don't look for a complete shutdown of the Postal Service anytime soon.
There will always be delivery to people's homes. So whether it's advertising mail, first-class mail, you'll still want to get birthday cards in the mail, right?
Sure, why not?
That's so sad. That's the saddest soundbite I've heard all week.
That's what we're going to continue to use the post office for.
It's almost like he was asking us for some sort of confirmation.
Please mail birthday cards.
Really? I could use a positive affirmation that I just won. Come on, guys. You're still going to be there for me, guys, right?
It's got to be more than just foreclosure notices and Bed Bath & Beyond ads. Birthday cards.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here is Dante.
A West Virginia public vocational school has been shut down indefinitely after traces of methamphetamine were found throughout the building an investigation of a principal and a teacher.
Excellent.
State Police Sergeant Andy Perdue said Monday that traces of the drug were found in the ducts, the principal's office, the hallways, and the bathrooms of the Boone County Career and Technical Center. Perdue says the teacher admitted he smoked meth with the principal in the principal's office.
Where is this?
West Virginia.
Well, it doesn't even really matter. Honestly, if you're at a vocational center, you need whatever you can get to make it through that day. That is a long-ass day of being a teacher.
And a vocational center in West Virginia.
Well, let's be honest, dealing meth probably is going to be your vocation.
Yeah, I mean, you're trying to teach people to get jobs, and you're going, but keep in mind you live in West Virginia, so there are no jobs.
Literally, Hank Williams Jr. and Lisa Desjardins are the only two people from West Virginia who don't work in a mine getting black lung or sell meth to the locals. That's it. The jobs are gone. They're not coming back.
The teacher says police do not have evidence the school, or actually whoever they're talking to, said police do not have evidence the school was used as a meth lab. Teacher Jack Turley faces charges of manufacturing meth and procuring Sudafed for making meth, even though apparently the school was not used as a meth lab. Principal Keith Phipps faces charges of purchasing over the legal limit of Sudafed. Apparently, that's all they could get that guy on. Even though the other guy says that they were smoking meth at the school, he's only charged with purchasing over the legal limit of Sudafed.
Well, wait, so he didn't have meth, though.
Well, they didn't find him with it, apparently. The teacher says he smoked meth with the principal in the principal's office. Sounds like the principal is not admitting anything, frankly.
Is this sort of like a Cuban cigar thing? Where, he didn't import them, they just happened to be here.
Yeah.
I didn't make this meth. It was in my drawer, though. And so I figured, we've got it. Hey, why not?
And I was lighting my lighter to light a Bunsen burner in the science lab, and I accidentally lit the crack pipe.
I filled this pipe full of crack.
And then I tripped onto it and was so surprised I inhaled into my lungs.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, vocational schools, that's a hard road to hoe. I mean, meth, booze, occasional hallucinations, whatever it is you need to make the day bearable, I would say you should just go for it, not feel bad about it at all. Here is Don Taylor.
Eugene police say a handcuffed man ran from officers and jumped in the Willamette River, swimming away for about 15 minutes before police used a fire department boat to catch up with him on a downstream island. The register guard says Bo Walker Hodge was then booked into the Lane County Jail on Tuesday for investigation of consuming alcohol on unlicensed premises, giving false information to police, and escape. Police spokeswoman Melinda McLaughlin said he also had outstanding warrants for failing to appear on misdemeanor assault and menacing charges and providing false information. She says the 30-year-old man has no known address. With his hands restrained, McLaughlin says the man, quote, looked like he was basically treading water on his back and he was kicking.
And this is in what? By Eugene?
Yeah, this was in Eugene. Cops arrested the guy, handcuffed him. He went freedom! And took off even though he was handcuffed and jumped into the river.
It seems like that's a thing where you could just allow the infection to take its course and he'd probably stop moving and float to the surface at some point.
Officers did order Hodge out of the river, but McLaughlin says he refused, saying he would rather die than go to jail.
Well, I mean, look.
And isn't that when you should kind of go, well, okay.
I mean, honestly, you have to give it up to a guy that occasionally a man chooses his own destiny. You know, occasionally a man just sort of says to himself, this is exactly how I'm going to move forward.
Am I the only one who keeps hearing fairy music?
Yes.
Okay.
Here's Don Taylor.
All right. Norwegian investigators have found no evidence linking Anders Breivik with any far-right extremists in the country or elsewhere, Norway's domestic intelligence chief told the BBC, which is in directly contrary to something I read yesterday about him having extensive contacts with U.S. right-wing groups
Was that sort of like he's just hanging around outside, though? On his tricycle. Guys, you let me in. We're going to go. It's a race war. You don't want to miss the race war. We're all going to go. We're going to go cleanse the gene pool. Guys? And he's headed with the post office guy, just looking for someone to affirm his view of the world.
Oh, yeah. And the Klansmen and what have you here are going, hey, he's not with us.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, God, it's that guy again. He's always hanging around.
And then eventually, like George Harrison, you have to let him in the band.
He's the Vern of the Norway crazy movement.
We don't have indications that he has been part of a broader movement or that he has been in connection with other cells or that there are other cells, said Janne Christensen, head of the Norwegian Police Security Force. At a court hearing earlier this week, Breivik suggested he had collaborated with two terror cells to orchestrate Friday's bombing and shooting spree, While those claims now appear false, Christensen said the police were continuing to investigate nonetheless. I don't think there is any limits to the evil in this person's head, she said. We can't take any chance with this person.
That's kind of impressive, actually. There's no, I mean, literally no, the evil just goes on and on and on and just continues.
A black hole of evil.
It's just, yeah, it's just one repeating sort of wormhole of bad in his head. That's almost giving him supervillain status, I have to say.
Official suspect Anders Breivik does admit carrying out the bomb and shooting massacre. Breivik's attorney, Geir Lippestad, says his client believes he's at war.
Lippestad may give you... What am I thinking of? What does that remind me? Lipitor.
Oh, I thought you were thinking Lipizzaner Stallions.
No, that would have been good, too.
Yeah.
See, that's where I could really use that circus music you were claiming to hit. Then I could... Lipizzan, coming to your town, galloping gracefully through courtrooms. I'm sorry, what is the cut here?
He says it's Norway won.
All right.
This whole case is indicated that he's insane. He's in a war, and he says that the rest of the world, especially the Western world, don't understand... His point of view.
I think we can all agree that this is a fantastic accent. That's
it
the
is.
One thing in this story that is beyond dispute.
Breivik's attorney says his client doesn't like many people.
One man, Breivik.
He shows hate to everyone who's democratic. Everyone.
Wait a minute. Was his setup actually that he doesn't like most people?
Yeah, he doesn't like very many people.
Is that really all it takes to be considered crazy and get locked up now?
In Norway, because in Norway, everyone loves everyone.
The hell with that. I'm staying here. I'm never going to Norway.
He shows hate to everyone who's democratic, everyone who lives in the Western world, everyone who believes in a normal political system. So anyone who's not extremist, he will hate.
Well, really, no offense, but that just means you're breathing, honestly, if you have that opinion.
The piece I was reading yesterday is that I guess he has been, at least internet-wise, because with the internet, everybody can be in contact with everybody else who's crazy. You can go read, message boards and forums and things for your particular kind of crazy pretty much any time, day or night, that you want, no matter where you're located. But there was an interesting piece in Mother Jones about the novels of Stieg Larsson, the girl with
right.
the dragon tattoo and stuff, because a lot of, particularly here in the U.S. and in Western countries, they're just huge bestsellers, but no one ever seems to talk about the fact that they're also really, really political novels, that Larsson himself was a political journalist, that he ran a liberal human rights
right.
or favor, and that the sort of white supremacist extremist movement in Sweden is really dangerous and really super hardcore, and apparently it has been leaking into Norway.
Well, that's one of those things where if you read the book, and I'm about halfway through that first novel right now.
Yeah. And the character is based on him, and the magazine in that is based on the magazine that he founded and he ran himself.
And it's really the Millennium magazine is obviously a romanticlave for Larsson himself and for this whole
yeah.
because he was.
And he said that everything that happens to like the journalists and stuff in his books is all anecdotal. It's happened to him or to journalists he knows.
You can tell, actually, it's an interesting thing about the book, which I'm quite liking. It wasn't that I was prepared not to like it, but it's just, it takes a lot for me to get into fiction sometimes. And also, I have to say, with the girl with the dragon tattoo, which again, I'm about halfway through the first novel, and my wife just devoured them as she went through all three in like a month or something. And so, but I'm reading it, and I was prepared to hate it only because it did that thing of the very first thing you see in the book is a family tree chart. And you just go, oh, God. I don't want to think about anything. What the hell? You know, it's like one of those...
It also makes you think, oh, is this going to be hard to follow?
Because
there's going to be too many characters and it's going to annoy me and I'm going to have to, like, go back to reference materials.
Who is it that said that he doesn't read books that start with maps? It might have been David Walker. Somebody's like, I don't read any book that begins with a map. If there's a map of anything, F that. I'm not reading it. And so that's my thing with a family tree where it's, you know, where you're trying to see, like, who Tom Bombadil was born to. And you're just going, like... F this. But you get just a couple of chapters into that and you can tell it's just, I don't even know how I would put my finger on this or quantify it, but you can tell that it's something that's drawn from life. There's stuff that is basically a traced over version of a guy's real existence, just feels different somehow. And this has that texture to it all the way through. White guys.
Yes.
All right, here's Don Taylor.
The state of Oregon, always in need of some good economic news, will get a boost from Facebook after the social media giant announced it will expand its Prineville-based data center. Ken Patchett, Facebook's Prineville data center manager, told Prineville city councilors that construction on a second building on the company's property will begin in October 2011. The expansion is due to business needs, Patchett said. Facebook now has 750 million users, an increase of 400 million since the date Facebook first announced its Prineville facility. Currently, there are 54 full-time employees at the data center. These employees provide building maintenance, security, and maintenance of the servers. Facebook expects a small increase of about 10 jobs at the Prineville campus as a result of the 2011 expansion. But Senator Ron Wyden says the construction will also equal hundreds of construction jobs in the near term and a long-term investment in the future of Central Oregon.
I don't know if you've seen the video of that actual of the data center there, but it's amazing. It is unbelievable. It looks like the only comparison I can come up with is it looks like that sequence in The Matrix where they're just standing in the big white Gap ad space, and then Neo says, you know, guns, we need lots of guns. And suddenly just rows, thousands of rows of guns appear. It's like that, except they're not rows of guns. They're just rows of these computers that are unlike any computers you have ever seen in your life. And then they have a whole video that you can watch online. It's like 7 minutes of just a tour of the cooling system for the computers for Facebook in Prineville. It's just jaw-dropping.
This is one of those things that later we're going to look back and we're going to see that, yeah, that's the brain center for Skynet. We're going to go, we should have realized that's what he was doing all along.
It's unreal. I mean, I don't mean this in dense, but it's one of those things where you figure like, well, can't they just run off like a guy's laptop or something? It's just people chatting. but you just see this, and it just is like this computer farm that just goes in every direction as far as the eye can see. And again, the cooling system and the backup system and the redundancy system and all of that. It really is. I am fascinated by places like that. Here's why the other reason I'm fascinated by storage centers and data centers like that is because they are the closest thing to that thing that you always hear bands talk about where they say, well, in the vaults, we've got these alternate takes of the White Album. And you're like, well, where's the vault? Like, where is the vault that bands keep all of this stuff in? And that place is exactly what I pictured the vault looking like, except it's a modernized, sort of updated take on that. Or perhaps the Fortress of Solitude. Like if Superman was a big WoW player or something.
Or the building in which Jay Leno keeps all his cars.
That too, yes, indeed. Yes. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday. What?
I hate knuckle cracking.
I didn't know that was a thing.
I can't help it. It's something that's kind of, I'm ever so slightly squeamish about.
I won't do that again.
Oh, yes, you will, but it's okay. I'll deal with it.
If you're off put by that noise, I won't. You're listening to Legion of...
Oh, that's way better. Yes.
News. Here at Cascadia.fm, thank you for joining us. Next hour of the Rick Emerson Radio Program at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Attorneys for polygamous sect leader Warren Jeffs will argue a motion to suppress evidence today in a Texas courtroom. Jeffs is charged with child sexual assault and bigamy. Willie Jessup, a former follower of Jeffs, says he's come to believe that Jeffs is a wicked man.
His conduct will never be sanctioned by me. I don't think there's anyone in my church that will ever sanction what he has done. It's just a matter of time until they come to terms and figure out how to cope with what he has done.
This sounds like someone who had the realization that they were going to put him in a small room for the rest of his life if he didn't quit, sanctioning the diddling of underage girls.
Yeah. Jessup, a former follower of Jeff, says... Jessup's... How are you doing with that new soundboard over there, by the way?
No, that was actually... That's not even the soundboard. That is that's what Thomas Gill would call EBK. That is an error behind keyboard.
Jessup says Jeff's diary shows the sect leader betrayed his church.
He said he's a very wicked man, and he confessed to doing some very terrible things, including molesting his daughter and sister and others. And I think his own words describe himself more than I would care to characterize.
His daughter and sister and resident. And insert here. It's just sort of like a polygamist Mad Libs over there.
So, just out of curiosity, if you're the guy's a polygamist sect leader and you are a follower of his, which means you probably are also a polygamist who are also probably multiply married to women, several of them probably underage.
This is your assertion, not mine.
I'm just saying that if you are a follower of this guy and he is doing the things that he ostensibly did, how is it that you don't actually know that those things are going on until, like, you get to read his diary?
Well, if you were to ask this guy, it seems to me that what he's saying is that he didn't know that there was actual, like,
incest?
Like, foursome going on.
Oh.
He might have thought it was all of, you know, God's plan. And then women at that age, and by that age, I mean, like, whenever the guy in the sky told them. Just, you know, open like a beautiful flower, Don, as is part of God's divine plan for everyone.
But also everything he says is that this guy Jessup was a wicked man.
Yeah.
So, but what was he himself doing? I mean, was he like, you know, only marrying ladies after he dated them extensively for many months and it was completely consensual?
Yes, he bought them one of those roses from 7-Eleven that's right by the cash register by the Alberto sausages, you know, and the little mini horoscope scrolls.
Took her out to the multiplex and they saw a G-rated movie. And
exactly.
Then,
yes. He stuck to the girls who were asking for it.
Okay. Where are we here? To the list of places where smokers will no longer be able to light up, government buildings, parks, restaurants, and bars, public housing residents in San Antonio will soon add one more, their own homes. The San Antonio, Texas Housing Authority plans to impose a new policy in January that will prohibit residents from smoking indoors or away from designated outdoor spots at all 70 of its public sites. The ban, which will affect about 15,800 residents, aims to protect non-smokers from secondhand smoke and allows a growing nationwide trend to eliminate smoking at public housing authorities. Since 2009, when the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development issued a directive that strongly encouraged housing authorities to adopt non-smoking policies, the number of agencies that have banned the practice has more than doubled to an estimated 250, according to the Smoke-Free Environments Law Project. San Antonio will become the biggest housing authority in Texas and one of the largest in the country to adopt a smoking ban, joining other major agencies in Boston, Detroit, Portland, and Seattle.
Also, they're going to make college campuses in Oregon smoke-free. That was on the front of the Oregonian yesterday. This despite the fact, by the way, that smoking is, in fact, legal.
Yes.
And also encouraged by the government, who gives subsidies to tobacco farmers.
And also, if you're in Section 8 housing...
You're crazy. That's Clinger.
Well,
I'm sorry.
No, but I mean, it's your own home. You know, it's isn't it legally?
Well, when they say it's public, when they say it's public housing,
well,
I think
I
public indicates not private.
All right.
If the government, if it's being subsidized by the government or by the taxpayers, then it doesn't belong to you. Which, again, doesn't seem to stop them from giving subsidies to tobacco farmers themselves. So, yeah, what are you gonna do?
Well, and I do want to say not that this story was trying to sway readers in any one direction, pro or con. But I have included the photo that accompanied this, the caption of which is, Chris Tatum smokes on the front porch of his Wheatley Courts apartment. Tatum says he tries to avoid smoking inside the apartment around his stepchildren. Under the prohibition, he wouldn't even be allowed to smoke there.
Is he an attractive man?
No.
Okay.
I believe this photo seems to be, it's supposed to illustrate, I guess, the average public housing resident who smokes.
Now, do you suppose this might actually just be the average public housing resident? I'm just saying. I haven't looked at the photo yet.
It might be, but...
I know that's usually the more attractive section of society.
It strikes me in a journalistic sort of a fashion that this this photo does kind of fall on one side of the... you know, the equation.
Now, I would say that that could just be your journalistic bias showing. He may have been the only person who was willing to comment on the record about this for fear of angering the man.
That's true. And there are people in Texas who may look at him and go, that is a good looking man.
He may be the absolute, like the far end of the bell curve. You'll be able to see this in a moment at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for July 27th. That'll be there in just one moment. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Science on the March. Later on, your entertainment news. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Hick Watch, Corpse Watch, and Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. And it's all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where you can join brand new listeners such as Nya.
Nya! Welcome, Nya.
Welcome, Nya.
Is that like a Korean name?
Yes. No, I'm accenting the wrong syllable.
Oh, okay.
You'll be able to listen for the low cost of just 32 cents a day. That is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. And again, you can see the picture of, what is his name?
His name is something Tatum.
Well,
Chris Tatum.
Now, if he were 25 years younger, he'd be attractive in a sort of like a sort of Raymond Chandler kind of way.
Yeah, I suppose if he was a character in the late 1940s and he was wearing a fedora and he was in black and white.
If he was a character in L.A. Noir, I suppose that he would look good. Here, the problem with, as with so many the people that you see in real life, the problem here is a color photograph.
Yes,
that's really the issue. Here's Don Taylor.
Here's a story that was forwarded to me by Ms. Cheryl Kanakoa.
Oh, is this the Walmart story?
Yes.
I was thinking we should save that.
You want to
say
that?
Because it's gold.
Okay, we'll save that.
It's gold, and I think really deserves a better buildup than we can give it here.
Okay. Well, this is also gold, just in a different sort of way. A Delavan woman. I'm not entirely sure where Delavan is, but it's in Wisconsin. A woman in Wisconsin has filed a lawsuit accusing a man from Edgerton, Wisconsin, of infecting her with genital herpes. A Janesville Gazette report says a 33-year-old woman is seeking $350,000. She claims the 35-year-old man knowingly exposed her to a sexually transmitted disease. The lawsuit said the man and woman were each married to other people when they began flirting in 2009. The woman says the two spent a day together in January 2010, culminating in sexual activity in the man's pickup truck.
That's really the most romantic phrase that yes. One could possibly imagine in a story.
The man has denied giving her herpes and has told her to check with her other partners. She says her only partners were the man and her husband. The woman says her husband has been reluctant to have sex with her since her diagnosis.
And where did this take place? I mean, apart from in his truck? I mean, where was the actual state?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Well, you know, there's a limited number of opportunities in the dating pool there. It's finite. New listener, Mary Suzanne, by the way. That is her name. Mary Suzanne, new listener and subscriber to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, listening for just 32 cents a day. And is Mary Suzanne joining us today and every day at rickemersonshow.com. We're going to have a Hick Watch today, Corpse Watch today, and Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. I'll be coming up next hour. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your science.
Pardon me. What?
News? That's the latest noise to replace knuckle cracking over here.
Okay.
The Rick
All
Emerson
right.
internal soundboard. Okay. Wait, hold on. There we go. That's another one.
Okay, crack your damn knuckles.
Here's your science on the march for Wednesday, July 27th, 2011. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric, or they can be called by you for things at 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. They are Squires Electric, the proud sponsors of this, your science marching the on. Here's Dawn Taylor.
A lethal bat-borne horse virus has been detected in a dog for the first time, authorities in Australia said on Tuesday.
Holy equine-canine crossover.
Prompting fears it has jumped species. This is the first time outside of a laboratory that an animal other than a flying fox or a horse...
There's no flying fox.
Or a human.
A flying fox is a wrestling move.
I believe there are flying foxes in Australia.
It's also not a wrestling move. I'm making that up.
Okay. But the first time other than a flying fox, a horse, or a human that this has been confirmed with a Hendra virus infection, according to Queensland State Chief Veterinary Officer Rick Simons. So far, 14 horses have died or been put down in Australia since June as a result of the Hendra virus, which was only discovered in 1994. No humans have yet been infected by the current outbreak, which has affected farms in New South Wales and Queensland, but four of the seven people ever to have contracted the disease have died. Simon said the dog, which tested positive for antibodies for the disease but appeared healthy, was on a property where Hendra had been confirmed and was currently under quarantine.
This is not to be confused with the humorous and self-righteous Tony Hendra virus, which can also infect you.
He added that the case raised many questions for biosecurity and health officials and researchers. He said, "We don't know how the dog contracted the virus or when it happened. Based on our knowledge to date, it's most likely the dog caught the virus from an infected horse. The virus is thought to be spread to horses via half-chewed fruit or water and food contaminated by bat droppings."
You're sure the horse wasn't in the front of the pickup truck with this guy and this chick in Wisconsin?
That could have happened as well.
Okay.
Malaysia has imposed a ban on the import of horses from Australia as a precautionary measure following the outbreak.
All right.
The experiment allowed an experiment that allowed scientists to observe single photon particles at their maximum speed for the first time also confirmed that a single photon moves just as fast as the speed of light in a vacuum, if not up to 500 nanoseconds slower in certain conditions. This basically means, according to scientists, time travel is not possible.
No.
With photons being a basic unit of electromagnetic radiation, or light, the research proves that light cannot move faster than light itself. Light cannot move faster than light itself.
Yes.
Making it impossible for anything else to move faster than light and debunking the theory of time travel. The research findings detail that photons obey the laws of physics laid out in the principle of causality in Einstein's theory of relativity. This states an effect cannot occur before its cause. Only the violation of this law would allow the possibility of time travel.
This is the sort of thing, by the way, this is the sort of thing that makes religious nutcases ever so slightly plausible sometimes when they point out that science is just occasionally retarded. When scientists actually have to run, like, jillion-dollar experiments to demonstrate that the effect cannot happen before the cause,
right,
and that then they trumpet this so-called discovery, that's one of those moments where you just go, guys, just keep, you're making yourselves look, but you're undercutting your own case.
Yeah, the theory of time travel became especially popular 10 years ago when scientists observed superluminal behavior in the photons of optical pulses that seemed to move faster than the light, according to BBC News. Professor Du and his team explained the phenomenon is an optical illusion and cannot be repeated in a practical experiment.
Also, Houdini didn't really make the elephant disappear from the stage at the Hippodrome.
What?
Just FYI. Not so much an illusion as it is a trick.
A 1967 photo of the moon's surface from the Lunar Orbiter 2, taken in 1967, that was widely described as the picture of the century, has just been found. It apparently has been missing. The photo was taken right before the spacecraft crashed on the moon. The Lunar Orbiter 2 was sent to the moon to map out possible landing sites for the Apollo missions in 1967, and although its efforts weren't the most successful, the spacecraft made its mark in history for taking a photograph of the lunar surface, widely considered the picture of the century. NASA intentionally crashed the satellite on the far side of the moon, out of the sight of telescopes and radios, meaning the space agency has no idea what happened to the craft. New information sheds light on that decades-old loose end from imagery taken by the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, a spacecraft with a similar mission to its predecessor, sent to orbit the moon and map the entire lunar surface in detail. A new picture from the LRO details a strange butterfly-shaped pattern that indicates a pile of lunar rubble. But it's far from a comet. Is it from a comet impact or the crash landing of the space probe? Scientists are not sure. James Ashley of Arizona State University says the impact appears much too large to be the result of an impact from a spacecraft only a few meters tall, but with solar incidence angle of only 12 degrees, it's difficult to see the crater rim and find out the true diameter. The truth is we are not sure what caused this impact feature, he said. We are currently retargeting the area under a higher incidence angle to help with crater rim measurements. Stay tuned, he said.
Oh, okay.
He said, stay tuned.
So they found the picture.
Yeah.
There's the thing. Okay. Yeah. I don't even know what picture we're talking about. This
well, they,
is really
no, they the... found the space. They think they found the spacecraft that took the picture.
So this is, it wasn't the picture itself that was missing.
I read that wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, no, they found the spacecraft that took the picture.
Makes
we
so much more sense.
We didn't have the spacecraft.
I was going to say, this is really the definition of the kind of thread that is useless without picks.
Yeah.
Okay, so now it's all come together in my head. Fantastic.
Following a Humane Society of the United States petition, federal officials have decided to revoke the authorization for Oregon and Washington to kill sea lions eating endangered salmon at Bonneville Dam. The Humane Society said the decision means the two states cannot kill any of the federally protected sea lions unless NOAA Fisheries approves a new request. Federal allow permits a fit... What?
You realize I can't see the story, right?
Federal allow permits official to kill sea lions. Federal someone allow permits.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nell.
Federal allow permits official to kill sea lions, it says. Only if the government proves that they have a significant negative impact on salmon. Since 2008, Oregon and Washington have killed dozens of sea lions that feed on salmon migrating upriver to spawn in the spring as they hit the bottleneck of fish ladders over Bonneville Dam. We're delighted the agency has changed its mind and revoked the state's authorization to kill hundreds of native sea lions for having the audacity to eat fish for dinner, said Jonathan R. Lovorn, Senior Vice President and Chief Counsel for Animal Protection Litigation for the Humane Society. It's time to face the fact that killing sea lions doesn't do anything for salmon and focus instead on real salmon conservation threats like hydropower and commercial fishing.
So it's so in the big face-off, so the salmon really, the salmon lost this round.
Yes.
Okay, all right.
And the sea lions say, woohoo!
Awesome.
And will now return to gorging themselves on salmon.
It's buffet time in the sea lion world. Mm. All right. Is that the end of science?
That's all of our science.
All right. There's your Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call 503-252-1600. 1609. Maybe have them put some of these space age motion detecting lights in your home or in your or like maybe in a room in your house without telling your loved ones, just to sort of gaslight them a little bit, just to kind of screw with them and carefully note the reactions in some sort of a journal over the next few years. Squires Electric can be reached at 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. They are the proud sponsors of your Science on the March here at Legion of News. Don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
An agent with the Transportation Security Administration, who allegedly harassed a slow driver in Connecticut, was arrested on Tuesday. Donald Eichler, 63, of South Windsor, was issued a misdemeanor summons of vehicle driven to harass or intimidate. He was released on a promise to appear August 8th. Eichler, frustrated with a slow driver ahead of him, honked his horn and flashed his TSA badge as he traveled behind her in an effort to speed her up.
Damn Dennis Weaver, driving too slow?
But the woman told police she felt scared by his actions. She called 911 and said she was being followed closely by a man. Probably said a crazy man. A crazy, angry old man. The woman kept police updated on her location until they arrived and pulled Eichler over.
So he was driving what sort of vehicle? I mean, it wasn't like a bus or something.
No, I think he was just driving his own car.
But he was using his badge as sort of a...
Yeah.
To give her what for.
He was tailgating her and honking and then just flashed her badge.
All right.
His badge.
In an attempt to be intimidating, which really just made him look like a nutcase.
I'm with the TSA. You have to drive faster now, ma'am.
I will come by. I will so grope you out of the window of this car. Do you see that guy, the one-handed guy that applied for a TSA job? And they wouldn't hire him because they said that he was not capable of doing a sufficient pat down with one hand.
Oh.
Which is, and really, I think as any guy can tell you, really, men master the art of the one-handed pat down early on in life. That is a thing.
That is true.
Sort of like a digital tying of cherry stems, you know, that we learn that we have to we have to become experts at that early on.
Some men get really quite good and almost ninja stealthy with that. They do kind of a kind of a Penn and Teller sleight of hand thing where they're doing
your bra's gone.
They're doing with something with one hand like on your hip or something, so you're not paying attention to what the other hand is doing, and then all of a sudden, whoa. Dude.
Where are my undergarments?
Exactly.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here he is. Is anybody else hearing fairy music? Here's Don Taylor.
Casey Anthony is reportedly seeking at least $1.5 million for a television interview. Defense attorney Ann Bremner says Anthony's attorney, Jose Baez, is the point person in the negotiations.
Let's see. This is Anthony 1.
Yes. These are huge bidding wars. These are fierce bidding wars. And he's out there negotiating for the best thing for his client to launch the next phase, which is monetizing basically her story. And there's a lot of money, and more money out there for her.
Sounds like somebody needs a job on a kooky morning show.
Consultant Andrew J. Scott says that an interview with Casey will be compelling television.
There's always that voyeuristic perspective that we all have, and she indeed is vilified by many people in the public, but yet, if she does give an interview, what type of person she is and what type of person could she possibly be?
Mike Walker of the National Enquirer says the money might be huge.
I think what we're going to be seeing here are bigger and bigger offers. I don't think us poor little fellas could even keep up with what you're going to see.
I love Mike Walker. Mike Walker's one of my favorite people in the whole wide
poor
world.
Poor little fellows at the National
Enquirer.
Yeah. After a weekend of near total silence, the Oregon political establishment peeked from behind the thunderhead enveloping Representative David Wu long enough to castigate his decision-making and drum up interest in at least three candidates who have expressed an interest in taking his place. On Tuesday, Wu announced his plan to resign days after the Oregonian newspaper published a story saying the seven-term Democrat had an aggressive sexual encounter with a friend's teenage daughter last year.
A sexual encounter?
An aggressive
sexual
encounter.
Now, when did it become aggressive? First it was unwanted, then it was wanted, but it was inappropriate. Then it was only alleged, and now it's aggressive.
And then yesterday on the news, I heard someone refer to it as a sexual assault. So I'm not sure we're entirely clear as to...
A sexual assault means that... Okay,
yeah.
First of all, a sexual assault means that there's a criminal record of it, and that he was found guilty of something. So that's obviously not true.
So now they're calling it an aggressive sexual encounter.
An alleged aggressive
right.
sexual encounter.
Well, yes, the Oregonian published a story saying that he had.
Okay.
Yeah. Within hours of his resignation announcement, the furrowed brows of the state political machinery came to bear on the embattled congressman. The state Democratic Party revealed that its officers had voted unanimously on Monday night to ask Wu to resign. Wyden and Merkley's offices sent out a joint statement urging Wu to step aside, and the Oregon GOP did a jig on Wu's political grave.
A jig?
That's
really?
That's what it says, yes. Saying his actions are a throwback to a time when Democrats dominated Congress.
The Lindy Hop.
State GOP spokesman Greg Leo said, he's out of touch with voters in the first district, and this gives us a chance to pick up a seat.
Sounds like he's in touch with voters.
Aggressively.
Yes.
In touch. Oregon's first congressional district stretches from the Pacific Ocean to West Portland and takes in all or part of five counties: Clatsop, Columbia, Washington, Yamhill, and Multnomah. Wu's statement announced the candidate field to take shape. Bruce Starr, a Republican state senator widely viewed as a viable moderate in the Democratic leading district, said Tuesday he will not run, while businessman Rob Miller said he's seriously considering a race and will make a decision within days. Miller is president of a Portland company that makes preserves and jellies.
He's homespun. He's plain people. That's how you can tell.
He joins Democrats Brad Avakian, the state labor commissioner, and state representative Brad Witt as contenders for Wu's job.
I was thinking about this, you know, because right now is you know, David Wu's opportunity, not unlike Casey Anthony, the opportunity to strike while the iron is hot, try to make a little bit of money off this. First of all, David Wu, if you're looking for an exciting career as a broadcaster, the Emerson News Network would like to offer you a slot on which you can just on which you can taunt your many enemies by name and perhaps threaten them if you'd like.
And you can wear the tiger suit as much as you like.
That's my other thing. So
Richie Bristol used to walk around like in a sailor suit and platform shoes.
Yeah, used to. So you know, Philo's got this John McCain chew toy. My dog Philo, he's got this. Speaking of which, I took the most adorable photograph of him. I'll put it up online later so everybody can look at it. But it's a photo of my dog Philo with this John McCain chew toy. So I'm thinking, David Wu, but it's a chew toy. It's a Wu chew, and it's him in a tiger suit as a dog chew for the, you know, like a toy.
That's
so
adorable.
Like a little plushy kind of thing.
Only it goes Wu.
It's not
Wu,
of it. It's not
Wu,
of
it. When you chew on it.
It's not of a tiger. It's not of David Wu. It's of David Wu in a tiger suit, 6 inches high, a little furry for the dog to chew on.
That's nice.
I'm telling you, how many people right now would place orders for those online?
And people are only going to want to buy that for another couple
That's
of months.
That's what I'm saying. So the key is you take advance orders, and then once it hits, you know, a certain amount of money, then you actually get them made somewhere. Perhaps he knows someone who can get those made cheaply in a factory. And then bam, there you go. Money in the bank. That's an idea free from, that's a public service from me to you. Mr. Wu, that's you can have that idea. That's just Rick Emerson as part of the electorate here. Just passing that along. Wu choose.
And also, anytime you want to come down, hang out in the studio, wear your tiger suit. We can invite some of our furry friends down. We could have just a furry party for you.
Yes, we're a big tent here.
Yeah,
this is a safe place of no shame, Dave. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Great-grandfather Kenneth Cabobble Sr., a 72...
Kenneth Cabobble,
72-year-old Marine veteran, had yet to put on his eyeglasses when he heard a knock on his office door in a Houston strip mall on Friday at 9:45 a.m. He was chatting with his brother inside the office, making plans for his day, and he figured the man outside was one of his workers coming to collect a paycheck. But when Mr. Cabobble opened the door, a man he had never seen before forced his way inside and put a 9mm handgun to his forehead. You're dead, he said, the man screamed. Give me the money, you're dead. He forced Cabobble to his knees, the brother to the ground. He emptied the brother's wallet, and Cabobble gave him $20, but the robber kept looking, patted down one of his pockets, and found a tight wad of bills totaling more than $800. You lied to me, the man screamed. Again, you're dead. Cabobble said the robber struck him in the head with the barrel of the gun and tossed the desk and credenza looking for more money. Robber finally was satisfied they had no more cash and told them to count to 100 before you even think about walking to the door. At the count of 20, the 72-year-old Cabobble called 911. Then he ran out the door, asked neighbors which way the robber went, climbed into his 1997 Lexus sedan, and sped off in pursuit of the robber.
Please tell me this ends with the robber being underneath the wheels of the guy's truck.
Well, his son had just pulled up outside and said, Dad's an ex-Marine. He doesn't put up with a lot of nothing.
I would imagine that's the case.
His father remembers the next few minutes, he said he saw the man in the parking lot of a strip mall headed towards him. He turned and saw me and pointed the gun at me, he says.
Oh, I sense the best ending ever.
The man fired at him at least once. Cabobble then rammed him with the car, but the robber jumped right back up and recocked his gun. I hit him again, he said. I hit him pretty good this time.
Awesome.
Police at Kabobel rammed the man against a metal fence in the parking lot of the strip mall. Details about the incident then become sketchy, police said. Investigators said they're trying to determine if another vehicle besides Kabobel's also ran over the robber.
Is this because there was just so little left of the guy to examine that they couldn't? Well, I don't know. He must have been hit by a meteor at some point.
Well, he said Kabobel got out of his car and looked around but didn't see the man, and even asked residents of the nearby apartment complex if they'd seen him run by, and they pointed to the robber lying nearby in the parking lot.
That's wonderful.
Kabobel, who's a former lawyer and, as we pointed out, a 72-year-old ex-Marine, then walked over, removed the gun from the man's reach, saw he was seriously injured, and said, I thought it was good that I caught this jerk who'd robbed me, but what I didn't like was this man was laying there and his life was ebbing away. I'm a Christian, and I don't want to see anybody die. So then, apparently,
I missed this right at the top. Where did this happen?
This happened in Houston, Texas. He was in his office, which is in some kind of a strip mall. He's a lawyer, I guess. And this guy just came in and robbed both of them and took off. And the 72-year-old ex-Marine...
He doesn't truck with that.
...said, no, sir, won't have it, and chased the guy down and ran him
over
with his car.
That's wonderful.
And, of course, the guy unfortunately died, and now Kabobel feels kind of bad about it.
Yes, it's unfortunate.
But at this other hand, though... This does seem like a man who's definitely in the running for one of those fruit baskets.
Oh, yeah, seriously, it's like the guy with a weapon comes after you and is either intending to or willing to do you harm. That is a guy that, not saying it's right to kill people, I'm just saying there's certain people that you just, there's certain people when they die, you have a moment of silence or, you reflect or you think about, what they might have contributed. And sometimes you just go, that happened. All right. And then you just move on with your life. And that guy's in the rearview mirror, literally sometimes. So
I like that apparently the 47-year-old son, too, showed up and saw his dad speeding away after an armed robber and just went, well, that's dad for you.
This is going to end poorly for someone. That's wonderful. Excellent. Let's see. It is 12:47 here in the Great Pacific Northwest. It is Wednesday, July 27th, 2011. Because it's Wednesday, don't forget that you can catch Don Taylor and Bobby Fatboy Roberts this afternoon, 4 p.m. Pacific time, here at Cascadia.fm for Ham Fisted Radio, and later at hamfistedradio.com, the Rick Emerson radio program, coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday right here at Legion of News at Cascadia.fm.
Actress Selma Blair and Jason Blake welcomed their child, Arthur St. Blake, into the world on Monday. The 39-year-old divorced Amit Zappa in 2006 and also dated her former Kath and Kim's co-star Mikey Day until last year. This is Blake and Blair's first child. During an interview on the Howard Stern Show on Tuesday, Hugh Hefner's ex-girlfriend Crystal Harris was none too complimentary about Hefner's sexual process. It lasted like 2 seconds, said the 24-year-old. Then I was just over it. I was like, I was over it. I just walked away. I'm not turned on by Hef.
Now, to be
sorry.
The thing about that is that's such a misleading headline, too, when she says that sex with Hef lasted 2 seconds. I think in that same interview, she actually says that they only had sexual congress once. And so I think I speak for most men when I say, honestly, if there's some Playboy playmate that's going to give it up to you, really, it's a man of iron who matches his usual sexual performance in those circumstances.
Well, and also, I think Hef is a man who's busy. He does a lot
doesn't
in a
day. Doesn't have
time
to dally.
He doesn't have time to dally. He enjoys having the ladies around him. And frankly, he generally has a lot that he has to get to.
And he's got like 12 other chicks to bang that afternoon. I mean, that's
so
like just during lunch.
So he probably likes to not, and he's 70... 2 years older.
Oh, he's older than that. He's 83.
So he probably, wants to... I mean, let's face it. Good for him to be able to do it at all, first of all. And secondly, he probably wants to knock it out quickly so he can get on to other things.
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may, yeah. Don.
Iron Man 2 actress Scarlett Johansson is the latest celebrity to be asked to the November 10th Marine Corps Ball. Sergeant Dustin L. Williams released a YouTube clip asking her on a date. See, now it's not cute anymore. Now if everybody's just, like, going on YouTube asking celebrities to go places with them.
No, but now you got to do an inversion, because they've already done the Betty White thing, and they've already done the Scarlett Johansson. Now somebody needs to ask, and then it's got to be someone, like, hideous. Or someone totally unlike... Somebody's got... Casey Anthony. I'm going to ask Casey. Is there a dance coming up I can ask her to?
I think we need to make a YouTube video with one of us asking some local celebrity to go with us to Bacon Fest. Or some really huge celebrity to go with us to Bacon Fest.
I can't tell if that's a good idea or not.
Okay.
My barometer's all messed up for that kind of thing.
A documentary on YouTube will open this year's Toronto Film Festival, making it the first time in 36 years when the fest has opened with a documentary. The project, titled From the Sky Down, was directed by an Inconvenient Truth filmmaker, David Guggenheim. Films featuring George Clooney, The Ides of March, and The Descendants, Brad Pitt, Moneyball, and Madonna, who directs Abbie Cornish in WE, will be screened at the festival, which runs September 8th through 18th. Paramount has announced that director Jason Reitman's next movie, Young Adult, will go into wide release December 16th. The picture stars Charlize Theron and Patrick Wilson and centers on a divorced fiction writer who moves back to her Minnesota hometown and tries to reconnect with her boyfriend.
Here's what needs to happen. I've been thinking on it. Okay, here's what needs to happen.
Okay.
The inversion could be this. I'm surprised that nobody has done this. So, again, I'm just giving these ideas away. This is, you know what I feel like? I feel like one of those, I feel like that guy in television covered with the question marks, who was just like, I'm going to tell you how to get free money from the government. I feel like I'm just giving these ideas away to a public that then just callously tosses them aside, doesn't use them. I could be charging for the, I could have some sort of consultancy running right now. Here's what needs to happen. Some Hollywood celebrity who's looking to get a little buzz, they need to just pick some random guy out of a phone book and ask him.
Yes, that's exactly it.
So, like, Sandra Bullock needs to pick some dude from, you know, from
Schenectady.
From Panguitch, Utah, and just go, hey, John Schlarp, I'd love it if you'd go to Morton's with me. I'd love it if you go to Elaine's with me for some scotch, and then we could hit Spago, and then how would you feel about attending the Golden Globes? You know, and then it's like, and then they cut to him going, I don't know, I'm real busy or whatever. But I guess, I mean, it's Sandra Bullock. She's America's sweetheart, I guess so. That'd be cute.
That would be adorable.
And it would be an interesting take on this whole thing.
I've decided I'm going to go on Twitter and I'm going to ask Daniel Baldwin to be my date for Bacon Fest.
Don't do that. Please don't. I beg of you. Please don't. I really, honestly. I'd rather you ask David Wu.
But Daniel Baldwin, we're already like this.
Do you really want to go with Daniel Baldwin to anything? You just end up all greasy at the end of the night.
Yeah. Heather Matarazzo has played some tough parts in her career, from Dawn Wiener in Welcome to the Dollhouse to Sadie Atkins in the upcoming Manson Girls.
Really?
Ooh, yes. Yes. I didn't know about that, but that's so cool.
I am suddenly fully vested in this story.
But she is now also apparently getting married. She is planning to marry her longtime girlfriend, Carolyn Murphy, in the fall. The couple have been engaged for 3 years and initially planned their wedding in California 2 years ago until Proposition 8 erased the rights for same-sex couples.
This is the hottest story I have ever heard.
Her girlfriend, and Heather Matarazzo, is
she's gorgeous.
Just gorgeous and adorable and so cool. And, yeah, and her girlfriend, who is a musician, is also super, super hot.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great, I guess. I suppose. If I can't have her.
Her girlfriend's name is Carolyn Line Murphy.
Doing that right now, and she's going to play one of the Manson girls.
And she's going to play Sadie.
This is the best story I've ever heard in my life.
In an interview with Associated Press, Matarazzo said she and Murphy will marry in New York this fall or next spring. She said she didn't want to be in a rush and do the City Hall thing on the first day. She said, "No. I always wanted a wedding, not a trip to City Hall."
Oh wow.
And her girlfriend Murphy says, Matarazzo says she's going to wear a simple off-white dress, but she has yet to find the right one. Murphy, a recording artist currently working on her first album, says she'll likely wear a white pantsuit, but a sexy one, she says.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was distracted by a thing.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because Heather Matarazzo, she really, really ended up because Dawn Wiener was just such an awkward-looking girl. And I think she herself was an awkward-looking actress. And, and I was glad to see that. And I also was glad to see that she didn't end up just being that one character forever. Because, she went off to college and she got a degree. And then she got other, some parts and whatever. And she was smart enough to tell what's-his-name to eat it when he wanted her to come back and reprise the role. And also hot. Also Manson girl. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. TNT has renewed Franklin and Bash for a second season.
What is, I'm sorry, is that a clothing store?
No, it's a TV show on TNT that's actually, it's kind of cute. It's, they're lawyers, but they're, they're cut from their own cloth lawyers who play by their own rules, but now they're working for like a big slick agency. But Mark Paul Gosselaar and Breckin Meyer are the leads.
Breckin Meyer.
And then their boss at the agency is Malcolm McDowell. And I love Malcolm McDowell so much. So, and I've watched it. It's quite entertaining. It's one of the shows that's really light and really kind of cute, you know. But it's very enjoyable. Director Seth Gordon told USA Today he's considering doing a Horrible Bosses sequel, which is unsurprising since it's grossed over $82.6 million domestically so far.
I know nothing about that film.
It's a comedy that's supposed to actually be quite funny. It's got Jennifer Aniston in it, so I stayed far away, but apparently
well,
it's actually
unfair.
It's actually supposed to be quite funny. I have nothing against Jennifer Aniston any more than I really have anything against, say, Kate Hudson. It's just that every movie, every comedy that they're in is generally just loathsomely awful.
Well, I would say that she's done her share of uninteresting films. I don't even know that her films are typically awful. They're just sort of bland. But, I mean, then every now and again she does like a, what was it, like The Good Girl.
Yeah.
Which I quite liked.
Yeah.
And even in like Office Space, you know, where she was genuinely sweet and likable.
I find her very likable and I think she's quite talented. I just
it's the movie she picks.
I go, oh, Jennifer Aniston movie. Yeah. And
okay.
So,
well, fair enough.
And of course, and then she also just recently made one with Adam Sandler, which is sort of like, you know, a double Jeopardy.
God.
Right
that,
there.
That looked like the worst movie. I remember watching I don't remember what it was called. It was called Just Go With It or something. Was that it?
Yeah.
There was like pretend you're my wife.
Have you seen the trailer for his next movie? He plays dual roles. He plays a guy and his horrible twin sister.
Really?
Okay. Yes.
I thought that was a joke.
No, there's an actual trailer for it.
Okay. That's actually happening, though. That's
apparently
not like
apparently that's actually happening.
Okay.
Unless I've been punked. Because honestly, it's one of those things, it looks so horrible. It could be a joke, but at the same time, it could be real with Adam Sandler. You know, there's no real bottom to that pit.
Do you suppose Adam Sandler was aware when he was making that Apatow movie that they were making fun of him? Or was he, I mean, or did he just not even really read the script and he just showed up for his sequences and didn't look at anything that was being shot around him in that film? Because I thought that film, as disappointing as Funny People was in many ways, and as overly long and as just kitchen sink as it was, at the very least I thought, well, this is an interesting way for Adam Sandler to break with his past and acknowledge, you know, that he made some money on a schlock fest, but now he's going to move forward. But no, he just goes right back to the well.
I think he genuinely doesn't care.
No,
I think he's one of those guys that he really honestly believes that he's serving a certain demographic who enjoy crap, and he's perfectly happy to ladle crap to them,
or that it's easier than actually working
and make a gazillion dollars at it.
He might just say that the good movies are harder to make.
Yeah,
which I suppose they are. So there you go. We have 10 seconds here.
I saw Cowboys versus Aliens yesterday, and I can't do a full review of it until Friday, but I liked it very much.
Well, we should talk more about that next hour. To whatever degree we can do that. That's coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. And with that, we bring down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agle, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kadakoa. Next hour, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, talking about the new Best of Portland issue, Hick Watch, Corpse Watch, and more. And so forth. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at LegionofNews.com or on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow. That is Thursday at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Have a safe and satisfying Wednesday. Won't you? Won't you?